The week doesn't start on Monday morning. The work starts, but it really starts before that. So do the work before you get to Monday, and then you're going to win Monday.
Win Monday Nation. It could not be more fired up to introduce you to today's guest, Brian LaFemina. And before we welcome him in, because we're talking former head of revenue for the NFL and the NFL league office. That's how we got to jam together overseeing a national sales campaign for Super Bowl 48. First time the big game was in New York. Our relationship goes far beyond that because that's over a decade ago. And here we are sharing this space. But I do want to remind everybody, if you have not gone to winmonday.win for more momentum in your business and life, that's where you can sign up for Monday Momentum. It is winmonday.win. So coming back to Brian, yes, we jammed out at the NFL league office. We may even share a funny story about magic beans in a little bit. We'll see if we go there. But most recently, he was the head of business, a chief business officer for the LA 2028 Olympics. Brian, from the bottom of our hearts, welcome to the show, brother.
Great to be here, Paul. Great to be with you.
100%, man. This is going to be jam-packed with insights around leadership, around team, around culture, and just what you and I vibe on. We were talking about this off the mic. Authenticity, bro. So let's just go there.
Some of our favorite topics.
That's it. For those, because this is much bigger than a sports audience. Everybody in Win Monday Nation, we're talking high performers, high achievers, some leaders, some sales, some entrepreneurs. Not everybody until today has known Brian LaFemina. Why don't you give us the fast pass of not only where you've been, but you and I have had some fascinating conversations about some of the most critical career decisions made along the way.
Absolutely. So fast pass, went to college at Rutgers University in New Jersey. I'm a Jersey, New York guy. Coming out of there, I had an internship at Madison Square Garden and got to work for my favorite teams in the world, favorite place to be in the world, Madison Square Garden, the New York Knicks, the New York Rangers concerts, you name it. And I got an internship there, which was fantastic. And right around that time, they were a growing company. And coming out of college, I got a full-time job there and spent the next 22 years in a variety of roles. I started my career in the sponsorship and media space and disrupted myself a number of times. I was doing great, you know, running sponsorship and media sales at Madison Square Garden, a wonderful place to be, my favorite teams. And I had this idea that maybe someday I might want to run a team. So I disrupted what I was doing. And I said, you know what, I'm going to go and I'm going to run ticketing and suite sales and a bunch of other things at the Garden that I had never done before. I was fortunate to have that opportunity. And that led to me running most of the business operations for the Knicks and the Rangers in the Garden, which was great. And then I disrupted myself again and, you know, left the team world and ended up going to the National Football League to start up a new group, Club Business Development, which was an internal consultancy that worked with all 32 franchises, the owners, the top executives, to help them optimize their local businesses, which was amazing to have the opportunity to really study and understand and get underneath the hood of all of these different businesses in different markets. For somebody who spent his whole career in New York, it was eye-opening to see, you know, what was the same, what are kind of the universal truths in business, and then what's really different based on different marketplaces. And while I was at the NFL, I was always striving. I wanted to do more. I wanted to, you know, have more influence. I wanted to do the next thing. And I was really fortunate to work for Commissioner Goodell. And, you know, he knew that I was a striver, a climber. I wanted to do more things. And he just said, listen, if you see a vacuum, fill it. And that's one of the things that led us to be together, frankly, Paul, because he asked me on a flight one day, hey, what do you think could really, you know, be game changing this year if we did something new? What do you think could have a huge impact on the league? And right away, I focused on Super Bowl. And I just felt as though the owners, the league, the people who invested the most in the game were not necessarily the ones who were benefiting the most. There was a vibrant secondary marketplace with ticket brokers. And I thought that we could change that model. So he said, go ahead, go do it. So I was at the NFL. I got to do that. I got involved in stadium development. I got involved in the three franchises that moved during my tenure at the NFL, the Chargers back to Los Angeles, the Rams back to Los Angeles, and the Raiders going to Las Vegas. So I had a front row seat and was involved in that every step of the way. I was responsible for, you know, the ticketing strategy, doing deals with Ticketmaster and changing what had been an exclusive arrangement to an open arrangement. So kind of, you know, doing a lot of different things to one of my friends at the league calls me an intrapreneur and says, you work inside these big organizations and you see unrealized value and you kind of drive change. So that's kind of what I groove on. So I was there for...
Hey, Brian, real quick, and then we're going to continue with the journey. Absolutely. Because that's as much as we just heard there, that's an incomplete journey. Like, folks, there is more that this guy has done, but I cannot go past this. One, you talking about disrupting yourself. We're going to absolutely come back to that because there's a lot of folks in this conversation listening in that need to be disrupting ourselves more. But also, I cannot just gloss over the fact that, look, you were reporting straight into the big guy and, you know, Commissioner Goodell. And I heard, did I get this quote right? If you see a vacuum, go fill it. Did I hear that right? Okay. Yeah. Here's my question for you.
Yep.
Aside from that, what is an insight that you having exposure to Commissioner Goodell, what is one lesson or one insight that you could say from all of our time, I took this away?
I've never met somebody who has more pride in the institution that they represent and more understanding of the value of that institution than Roger Goodell. And understanding your value, understanding the value of your organization is key. The reason the NFL is where it is, in my humble opinion, is because Commissioner Goodell understands the value of that league and what it means to this country.
So well said. All right. So you're at the NFL league office. That's how we got to know each other. I'm going to figure out a way to talk about some magic beans here. Okay. We're going to come back to magic beans, folks, but continue.
They're only magic if you're from Los Angeles, by the way.
Yes. Yes. And we're going to throw this Angelino under the bus in just a little bit.
And by the way, having spent the last 4.5 years in Los Angeles, I get it now.
We are a soft people. Okay. Continue with your journey. So NFL league office to where?
NFL league office, and I'm doing great and great things are happening. And it just, by happenstance, a lot of the things that I had been working on, I just mentioned, which was the move to Los Angeles, the building of SoFi Stadium, a big deal with ticketing companies, all that was kind of coming to a crescendo at the same time. And I had an opportunity to go take a job at one of the clubs. I was offered the opportunity to become the president of business operations for the then Washington Redskins, the Washington Commanders. And certainly, it was a job that I understood was going to be high risk and high reward. Obviously, you know, people have read the news and they understand the challenges that were in Washington. And when I was making that decision, you had a once, you know, unbelievable brand, unbelievable franchise that had fallen on hard times. The fan base was disaffected. The brand wasn't where it really needed to be. An incredibly important market when you think about the fact that it's in our nation's capital. And the way that many politicians view the NFL is through the prism of that team and needed to build a new stadium. I looked at it and said, you know what? This could be fraught with a lot of challenges, but man, I love challenges and I love big opportunities and I like taking big swings. And I had complete belief in my ability to go there and to make a real impact, not just, you know, in my career, which was great, I guess, but for the people who worked for the Washington franchise, for the people who rooted for the Washington franchise. So I went and I did that. And I think that, you know, looking back on it, it was the right decision at the right time for me. It was the right opportunity. And I'll cut to the punchline very quickly. It didn't work out. It didn't work out. The result was not what I wanted it to be. I was there for a relatively short time, less than a year, basically a football season. And that's okay. I look back on it and I'm glad I took the chance. I'm glad that I made the decision I did. I don't like the result necessarily, but it's led to so many other things in my life, what my next position was, but more importantly, a greater understanding of myself, the things that I need to work on. It was a really important seminal time in my career and my life.
What did you learn about yourself?
Oh God, Paul, there are so many things, but I think the most important thing was to just believe in what you know the right thing to do is. And there are times in your career where you have choices to make and you can take an expedient route or you can take the route that, you know, might be a little more challenging, but you believe that's the route to go down. And I decided to go down roads that I thought were the right thing for all the people who were invested in that franchise. Like I said, I'm proud of myself that I had the tenacity to go down that road, even when at times it was not going to be necessarily working out well for me.
Yeah. And we were chatting even before we started to record this conversation, and I'm paraphrasing here, but you said, if I had to do it all over again, I'd do it the exact same. So even knowing the outcome, even knowing the consequence, or knowing whatever it is, like, it's easy to have regret. It's easy to focus on the woulda, coulda, shouldas. But in your case, you're like, no, dude, like, I genuinely in my heart felt this was the right thing to do. And sure, I thought the ending to the story would be very different, but it wasn't. And if I had to do it all over again, I would do it. And that's what we were talking about. And look, as somebody that wrote Better Decisions Faster, that I don't promise positive outcomes. I promise an authentic process, process to make decisions through. If you want to win Monday, then momentum is required. We're all searching for that bit of motivation, inspiration, or sometimes it's a tool, it's a tip, it's a tactic, it's a strategy. How do I win the day to create more momentum to win the week? If this is you, then head over to winmonday.win and sign up for Monday Momentum. That's winmonday.win. I'll see you on the inside.
And by the time I had made that decision, I had been in this business for, I don't know, 25 years probably.
Yeah. So
I go and I do that. And look, anytime any of us takes a swing and it doesn't work out, all those voices in your head are like, why did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
What bad decision that was. Is that what I really should have done? And what I found out really quickly when I ended up leaving Washington was that those 25 years of good work and hopefully of being a positive influence on others and, you know, doing the right thing as much as you possibly can really does pay dividends. You know, everybody talks about how it's a marathon and not a sprint. When something like that happens, you realize that doing little things every single day that are operating in the right way do pay huge, huge dividends, because I came out of that experience and I had 4 or 5 different opportunities right in front of me that were amazing. And you would think coming out of a situation like that, you could, you know, somehow your reputation could be, you know, damaged. And that wasn't my experience at all. And in fact, it was like, hey, you know, good for you for trying to fix something that was broken. And that took some stones, and good for you. So that was a great learning for me, is you always hope that's the way it works out, but you don't really know until you're in that situation. And then you also find out, listen, who are the people who, you know, you can really depend on when the chips are down? And I learned a lot about myself, and I learned a lot about the people around me. And what I can say is I've chosen the people that I spend time with incredibly well. And they showed me that at that moment in time.
Yeah. You had a 2.5-decade track record at that time of what we'll call relational capital. Every single, like, how you show up behind closed doors during that 25-ish years at that point in your career, how did Brian treat me behind closed doors? How has he changed my life for the better? How has he had my back without keeping score? It's not a tit for tat, you know? And so I think they learned about your character, your integrity. And at the end of the day, Brian, and you know this, it's an attract repel game. If you're going to lead with authenticity, it's not for everybody. Nope, everyone says they want it, and it's BS, dude. Like, I'm telling you, like, everyone says it, and then you give it to them and they're like, whoa. But I think in your case, the buyers of Brian, the authentic Brian over the 25 years, they're the ones that eventually had your back, because for 25 years you were having theirs.
No, it was great. And then, so, you know, I leave Washington and I have this, you know, next amazing opportunity. You know, I talked to Casey Wasserman, who's been a longtime friend and known for 15, 20 years. And he's doing the Olympic Games out in Los Angeles. First games in our country since 1996 in Atlanta. He said, hey, why don't you come help me do this thing? And want you to come and be the chief business officer and help me set the foundation for this organization up. And, you know, working on an Olympic Games in your own country is an honor. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I was a competitive diver in college, so had always been sort of an eye on the Olympic movement. I had never worked in it before, but there were a couple of reasons I wanted to go do that. One, again, you know, Los Angeles, the third time that the Olympics were going to be held there. It's such a great market. The portfolio of responsibility they had was amazing. Doing the deals with all the venues, reimagining the hospitality ecosystem for the entire Olympic Games, not just for Los Angeles, you know, figuring out a new way to do ticketing, transportation, security, and to do it on an international basis. And while I had worked internationally in the NFL a bit in Mexico and in the UK, this is a whole different, you know, a whole different level of international relations. And so once again, one of the things that I always am interested in is I love this business and I love learning about this business. I love learning things that I didn't know yesterday. And that was probably the greatest hockey stick learning opportunity that I could have ever taken without even knowing it. I just knew that it was a space that I hadn't been in before. International is something I hadn't really done on any great level before. And so having the opportunity to do new things and test myself and stretch myself was great. So I really enjoyed my time there. And I think that we did some really, really good work. And I know that LA 28 is going to be an absolutely transformational Olympic Games. And I can't wait to see what my former colleagues do with it.
Ah, so fired up. And as somebody that's here, man, I mean, I see whether it's the cranes that are all around the city or just obviously the news and the media, the hype, this, I mean, here we are at the time we're recording this, we're still 4 years out, but it feels in some ways like it's tomorrow. And for you that you work there, it probably felt like yesterday. You know, it's crazy. I do want to talk about this disruption theme, but before we get into it, let's lighten this up a little bit. I can't tease Magic Beans twice without. So before we go to disrupting myself, okay? All right. So here's the fast pass quick story for our Win Monday Nation. And I've never shared this publicly. So this is actually really cool. I get to share this. So Brian obviously is my boss at the time that we're doing this NFL league office and Super Bowl campaign. And it was awesome. And it was like a 9 month. When I say grind, I cannot add enough exclamation marks. Everyone says, oh, it's a grind. It's a hustle. Oh, this is the hardest I ever worked. Dude, 6 a.m. to midnight. Like, I mean, it's like, this was like the most intense chapter of my career. And Brian, I'm sure for you, we talked about how it was for you as well. And so when you get in that early after it feels like you just left the office 5 minutes before, and like, we don't see the sun, man, like we're just in the dark. And so one day Brian comes in and it's like 8:30 a.m., which again, for the normal person would be like, cool, that's when we start. But I'm just in my head, I'm like, oh, come on, man. Like, what's going on? Like, are you slacking on me? Like, what are you doing?
He thought I was getting soft on him.
I thought you were getting soft. But the funny thing was, Brian, it wasn't just that you walked in at 8:30. Like, and I mean this from love, like you looked a little like you looked like you had already had a full day. I could use a lot of words, but you look like you had been through something. And I'm like, what's up, man? Like, what's going on? It's 8:30. You're like, bro, don't even go there. You know, you were just on edge. And then you finally like opened up and you're like, okay, dude, like I was in my driveway, unexpected storm. I'm having to shovel snow and we didn't set it up. And then bam, I'm in the Lincoln Tunnel and there was an accident. And so I get stuck in there. And so basically I saw you after, it sounds like a handful of hours of hell. And so for me being an Angeleno, I had no freaking idea how this white thing called snow worked. And so when you're talking to me about shoveling it, I'm like, why didn't you just throw some of the salt on it? And you gave me daggers like this look. And you're like, what do you think they are? Magic beans?
Yeah. Paul thought that you throw some salt on it and the snow all goes away. But
I didn't know the salt comes before. So
this comes from somebody who would be late to work in Los Angeles if it's raining. So,
oh yeah, we cry about it. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All right. Disrupting myself. You said that. And your last riff, you said the words test myself and stretch myself. So I'm sensing a theme here. There's a lot of people listening in that here's the kind of perspective that I hear. When I hear disruption, oftentimes we do it when we feel we have to. Like, oh, a pandemic strikes, so let me disrupt whatever, because like my environment changed. And it's that cliche of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But I didn't hear a lot of broken in your journey. It sounded like you were being intentional. So if you're talking to our audience, how should we view disruption of self? Do you only do it in the good times? Do you only do it in the bad times? Do you always do it? Like, talk to us about disruption of self.
Look, I think that that's a decision each one of us needs to make for ourselves. I take the position, if it ain't broke, break it. I get very uncomfortable being comfortable. Like when things are going great, when I'm like, okay, I've got this nailed down completely. I know what I need to do. I can just continue to do it and everything will be great. I get a little jittery. I feel like it's time to sort of do something different, to not necessarily change jobs. Because again, at Madison Square Garden,
of course,
I was there for 2 years. When I was at the NFL, I was there for 8+ years. These are, you know, long periods of time. But, you know, even within those places, I was always kind of reinventing myself and trying to do something a little bit different. So for me, when I start to feel sort of satisfied, I want to keep that from ever being complacency. And I want to sort of learn the next thing and do the next thing. And, you know, I'm interested in a lot of different aspects of business and in our business. So having the opportunity to do something I've never done before and to apply the things that I've learned before to something new and disrupt that, you know, I love that. And, you know, probably the biggest example at LA 28 was this hospitality thing that we did, because Olympic hospitality was sort of disaggregated and it really wasn't a great experience for people. And I had this crazy idea that, you know, I was going to change this whole system in an organization, the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, that I had never worked in before. And like, literally, Paul, it's like my third week. And the guys from the IOC are all in Los Angeles. And I say, here's my idea. They're like, who are you? And I don't know anything about this. But I just like, I really spent like 6 months studying like what was going on, what I thought was broken, and the ways that we could fix it. And so I was able to kind of get the Paris Olympic Committee and the Milano Cortina Olympic Committee, ourselves at LA, and the IOC sort of all aligned to do this big thing. It took 2 years. And what was really interesting is we got most of the hard work done during the pandemic. And I believe, honestly, that if there was no pandemic, we couldn't have gotten it done, because everybody was locked in on their computers and not traveling, running around the world, which in the Olympic movement is, you know, the normal course of things. You're kind of jumping on planes and you're running all over the world. And we had kind of a year where we could really hunker down and think about this thing in a different way. And we changed something that was, you know, in place for a very, very long time. And, you know, so having the opportunity to make those big changes inside these big organizations that don't turn on a dime, I really like that. I think that, you know, working on a big platform like the Olympics or the NFL or Madison Square Garden has a lot of advantages. The disadvantage is not being as nimble as they may want to be. And that's, I think, where I excel, is kind of getting people aligned to do something that's, you know, a little bit new, a little bit different, and has big opportunity to kind of change the game.
What you just shared there is not only your own personal perspective, but then you got into a little bit of, now how does it scale and influence others? So now let's put our leadership cap on, because we do have a lot of leaders. And look, we democratize leadership here. I feel like everybody can be a leader of self, no title required. But also, hey, in corporate America, especially, we do have an org chart, and there are folks that say, hey, I've got a reporting team and it's all good. So talking to folks that are in positional leadership, when you're building a team, like, you're, humbly speaking, and I'll say this about you because you would be too humble to say it about yourself, but you're on the Mount Rushmore of what I would call sports, business, industry, not only leaders, but culture champions. Like, if you're looking to build a people first organization, not the BS where those are words on, well, everybody says people first, 90% don't do it. You're in the 10%. And within that 10%, then there's a Mount Rushmore. And so that's kind of my me propping Brian up, because I got to be in the trenches with you. Like, you led me, and that's why I would do anything for you, because of our time together. And so if we're talking to Win Monday Nation, when you're building a championship culture, when you're building a championship team, what are the non-negotiables? What are the keys as you're recruiting, as you're training, as you're inspiring? Like, what are the keys in terms of what's the DNA of those championship cultures?
Look, there's a lot that goes into it. I think, you know, first is choosing your team, which is the most important thing. So obviously, anybody you're going to hire, you assume is going to be technically proficient. Like, that's
sure. Kind of thing. The skill is there. Assume the skill. So what else? What's the will?
The first thing I would say is you got to have people who understand what hard work is and are willing to put the hard work in. And that doesn't mean hours. That means, like, what are the things that you need to do that nobody else is willing to do? And are you willing to do that? That's one thing. I would say maybe even more important, but on the same level, is be a good teammate. Everybody who I want around me, right, is a we before me person.
Yep.
Right. If the team doesn't succeed, nobody else, you know, none of the individual stats are really going to matter at the end of the day. I think part of that is helping other people succeed. You know, when you've done that, you know, whether you were, you know, and I know you have, because I know you, but when you've been in leadership positions, I know you did that. But when you weren't in leadership positions. You were turning around to the guy next to you. And I know those guys, and you guys were helping each other.
Yep.
And that's what made you leaders. You were leaders before you had a title. And so, you know, helping others succeed, and that's going to pay off. And that goes back to what I said about my leaving Washington. I really believe that, you know, I had a lot of opportunities because I try to, as best I can, to help other people succeed. Certainly you want to succeed for yourself, but your teammates and other people in your organization, and even people who you're just, you know, in the industry, right? Going and helping other people always pays off. People who don't want to take shortcuts, Paul. Look, there's a lot of shortcuts out there, but, you know, do the research, make the extra call, make sure that you underpromise and overdeliver all the time. If you say you're going to do something, do it. So when I put a team together, I'm exacting on these things. Like if somebody says they're going to get something done and they don't, that's a non-negotiable for me. I'd rather you don't say it or tell me you're going to try. But if you promise me you're going to get something done, then I expect you to get something done. But it's not just about that. It's from a leadership perspective, I'm wholly invested in every single one of those people, not as an employee, but I try to know what is it that they want out of their, in their lives, right? What makes them tick, right? And so when we were together, you know, you were thinking about, hey, I may get married. I want to start a family. Like that was important to you. And I wanted to make sure that I was helping you achieve whatever those goals were that could get you to the next step in your life. And I think it's incredibly important. The second thing is, you know, in my organizations, the first rule for anybody who is working with me, you have to argue with me. I insist that you argue with me, right? And what that leads to is I want everybody to argue with each other. Now, it's got to be obviously respectful and done in the right way, but that all starts with trust. You can't argue with each other unless there's a lot of trust inside that organization. And I always use this example. The people that I argue with the most in my life are my siblings. Mm-hmm. And why can't you argue with your siblings? Because you know they love you and it's never going to change. So you can get after it. And so when you have trust in an organization where they know that there are no repercussions for speaking their mind or challenging authority or challenging each other, as long as it's done in the right way, I think that's when you really start to make some magic happen inside an organization. Right? When everybody can really say, hey, here's what I'm seeing and here's why I think the path we're on isn't the right one. Now, at the end of the day, somebody is, you know, ordained as the decision maker. So, you know, you may say what you think the right thing is, and maybe your point of view doesn't carry the day, but you will always get your say. And what I've experienced in 25 years of sales leadership and just leadership in general is if people know that their point of view has been considered, they will walk out of that room and they will support whatever decision is made. And so, you know, as leaders, sometimes we want to get to the decision fast, but I also think that getting to the decision fast, there are pieces of that are important, which is making sure everybody has had a chance to weigh in. Not that they get a vote necessarily, but that their point of view is being considered. And then as the leader, you have to make the decision. You have to make it fast. And then you have to make sure everybody on your team is on that same page and that they're going to go out and execute as though it was their idea. So to me, that's like, if I had to differentiate, like one thing that I think is key to the teams that I'm a part of, the successful teams that I've been a part of, that's maybe, you know, number one.
So much gold in there. And I would loosely say these are business lessons and business insights. But actually, if I zoom out, I would just say they're life lessons and life insights, because we're using more of work as a space. But like, and that's where I want to go next. So two more questions and then we're going to exit stage left here. The first place I want to go, when you asked me, when I worked with you and for you, and most of the questions that you had for me, most of the conversations behind closed doors had nothing to do with what ended up being a record-breaking Super Bowl campaign. Like you just knew we were going to put in the work required to do what we needed to do to get it done. And it got scary and spooky and we did it. And there's a happy ending to the story even. But anyways, that's a whole nother cocktail and conversation. But what I want to share with our audience is Brian never asked me about the tactics, about the campaign. I felt cared for as a whole person. Like there wasn't work, Paul, and personal Paul. It's just, hey, Paul, the human being, how are you doing? And if I answered with something work, he's like, yeah, like, you know, he's like, this is actually where, and so at some point I just started talking almost exclusively personal. And I think that's why I would, you know, our relationship grew. But obviously you're a proud father. And that's where I want to go with our next question is, when you try to impress upon, and I'm a new father as well, 3 years into a journey.
I'm an old father.
Yeah. So biggest life lessons, life insights, like if you could really drill in on one or two things, I always say this to folks, there are certain things that you're not going to get taught in school, but you need to know in life. So like, what are one or two things that when you say putting your dad hat on, what's something that you want to pay forward to the next generation, obviously starting within your home, but beyond?
Yeah, I think there are two words that I, you know, and they don't necessarily seem to make a lot of sense in business, but one does, maybe one doesn't. I encourage everybody to be bold.
Mm.
But more important than that, I want people to be brave.
Mm. And what's the difference, Brian?
Look, I think bold means, the way I think about it, bold means that, you know, you're going to go out there and you're going to go in and reach for the stars and you're going to try to,
sure,
you know, you're going to try to move things forward.
Okay.
Brave means doing the right thing, even when it has consequences.
Ooh. Ooh.
And I think that societally and in business, that's something that there's probably not enough of. So if you see something that is not right, make sure that you're addressing it. Make sure you're not just letting it go. Going along to get along is not something that inspires people. So I think that, you know, taking a stand, if you don't stand for something, you're going to stand for nothing. And I think it's important to stand for some things. And I would tell any young person, you know, that's not to say, you know, haphazard about it. Like, you have to be well thought out about all these things. But I really encourage people to be brave, to do the things that other people might let go, because I think that it's great for you. It's great for the organization. And it's just, you know, you can never, my grandmother used to say to me, you can't go wrong by doing right. And so I try to live with that. You know, if you have an opportunity to do the right thing or do nothing, do the right thing, even if it's going to cost you something.
Mm, love it. Your version of brave is my version of courage, which is a core value of mine and my own personal definition. I don't really care what the Webster Dictionary says. My definition of courage is standing tallest when fear and risk are highest. That's absolutely it. And there's typically going to be consequences. To use your piece here about consequences, I understand that. And that's just the table stakes of bravery. That's the table stakes of courage.
Yep. And listen, you know, fear is a real thing, you know.
Absolutely.
Everybody has it. And it's doing the thing you need to do even when you're scared is the most important thing.
Yeah. And actually, fear is a good thing because, and here's why. It means that it matters. If I don't care about something, I'm not going to be afraid. I'm actually afraid of the risk of the consequence, but that shows me that there's meaning and it matters. So if you can lean into it and make fear a positive cue, a positive signal, you actually can sense that you're on the right track.
Let's go back to what you talked about, because on the Super Bowl sale, being spooky and scary, it was.
Yeah. Right?
We had put our chin out there and said to the commish, we're going to get this thing done. And I know you and I felt it every day when he walked down to our corner of the office. I was like, all right, where are you guys today? And, you know, but one thing I knew, whether we got to the goal or not, I knew that you and I and the other people there, we were leaving everything we could on the field. And if it came up short, we could look each other in the eye and say, you know what? We did everything we could do. And so that's why I love being in the trenches with you, because I knew you weren't going to give anything but 1,000%. To get it done. And so, you know, when you're doing it with somebody who's like-minded, it makes it a little less scary and a little less spooky.
Mm. Amen to that. To win Monday and beyond, we all know that confidence is the ante to play. And I want to help. So if you haven't already, head over to my website and take your very own confidence quiz, where you'll walk away knowing your confidence score 1 to 100. You'll also get my 12 keys to build and sustain unshakable confidence. Your quiz is waiting at paulepsteinspeaks.com. Main navbar, hit confidence quiz. Again, that's paulepsteinspeaks.com, and you'll find your very own confidence quiz right there in the main navbar. With that, let's get back to the show. Before the final question, where can folks find you, follow you, have inspired our Win Monday Nation? How would you like for us to keep the conversation going and just connect in your world?
Look, you find me on LinkedIn. You find me on Twitter at Bryloff. You know, I've just started a new consultancy called Springboard Advisors and, you know, starting to get into that world a little bit. And I've got some great clients and I'm doing some interesting work. And, you know, I get to scratch my itch of doing a lot of things in a lot of parts of the business and working with some of the you know, the greatest leaders in the business. So I'm out there and, you know, I'm excited for all of you guys, honestly. You know, anybody who's following this guy at Win Monday, I mean, you are listening to the right guy. Lean into this. I'm excited for all of you guys. I'm excited for anybody who wants to invest in themselves and is willing to listen to people like Paul and, you know, read the things they need to read and do the work that needs to be done. So I wish everybody the best of luck.
Bear hugs, man. And we're not going to let you off the hook. I bear hug you for that because that felt amazing to hear. But for everybody listening in, leave us with one thing that we can do on Monday to ensure that we win the day and create the momentum required to win the week. What's one lasting thought on what we should be doing this coming Monday?
I'm going to give you two, if that's okay. Map out what a win looks like on Sunday night, or even better, on Friday night. Don't wait till Sunday night. And know what the prerequisites are to win on Monday. What do I need to be reading? What do I need to be listening to? How can I give myself every opportunity to be better than the next person when I hit the ground on Monday morning? The week doesn't start on Monday morning. The work starts, but it really starts before that. So do the work before you get to Monday, and then you're going to win Monday.
Phenomenal. I'm so glad you doubled down on that. All right, Brian, this has been a fire conversation, my friend. Cheers to all the adventures ahead. Cheers to winning on Monday. And thank you from the bottom of our hearts for being on the Win Monday podcast.
Love you, brother.
Another fire episode of the Win Monday podcast is in the books. If you gain value from today's conversation, don't forget to subscribe and share it as we grow our Win Monday Nation together. Until the next time, let the rest of the world fantasize about Friday. You and I, we choose to win Monday.